agenda item, and that's public hearing on order number R1-214-13 to consider adoption of proposed waste discharge requirements for Lolita Community Services District Wastewater Treatment Facility. This is the time and place for a hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider adoption of revised National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit for the Lolita Community Services District Wastewater Treatment Facility, Order R1-2014-0013. This item has been properly noticed. Will all those who expect to give testimony in this matter please stand and raise your right hand and take the following oath? Do you swear or affirm that you will tell the truth in this matter?
Yes.
Okay. I've noted who it is, but please, when you go to the microphone, it'd be good to say that you did take the oath. There are timelines for this hearing. Staff is to have 20 minutes. The discharger will have 10 minutes. An interested member of the public will each have 3 minutes each. At this time, we'll start with the staff presentation.
And checking the time so I can say good morning, Chairman Corbett and members of the board. My name is Lisa Bernard. I'm a sanitary engineering associate in the MPDS permitting portion of the Regional Water Board. And I'm here this morning to talk to you about the MPDS permit renewal for the Lolita Community Services District. During my presentation, we're going to get an overview of just general secondary treatment, the secondary treatment conditions at the Lolita Wastewater Treatment Facility. We're going to talk about notable changes in the proposed order, and a key focus of why we're presenting today is that we've identified future compliance concerns with the implementation of the proposed order, and ultimately in a future board meeting, staff will be proposing to the board the adoption of a cease and desist order to address some long-term compliance issues at the facility. So at a typical secondary treatment, we would have moderate infiltration and inflow during the winter season. Infiltration and inflow is the result of storm water either or groundwater coming into the system. We might have flow equalization, not always, but often. We would have a functioning headworks that removes grit and large particles. Primary clarification is often part of secondary treatment. We have then some type of biological treatment, often an aeration basin or a trickling filter or some other type of biological treatment. Secondary clarification, disinfection, and solids management. So I just want to orient you. I apologize for not having a pointer with me. I just want to orient you a little bit to this photograph. This is an aerial photograph of the area just north of here, actually. So on the right-hand side of the photo, we have Highway 101 running from south to north. This is the community of Lolita that you see here. The pin in sort of the center of the photo represents the location of the wastewater treatment facility. And so everything at the wastewater treatment facility is received in the collection system by gravity, which is a great efficiency for energy. But it also leaves the facility by gravity in a subsurface pipe that's shared with a stormwater conveyance. And it goes into what is marked here on in red for the discharge point. So because the facility that we're talking about does not have any way to equalize flow during wintertime periods when flows increase, everything comes to the facility by gravity and leaves by gravity under whatever the flow conditions happen to be. So Just for those who aren't familiar with the community of Lolita, it is a small disadvantaged community that refers to their income level. And there are approximately 750 people living there. This is a biological picture of the biological portion of the treatment facility that was taken in 2003. Today, more than 10 years later, the facility remains largely unchanged. It actually remains largely unchanged since it was constructed in about 1978, although there have been some improvements. This wastewater treatment facility provides secondary treatment through the gravity collection system I mentioned earlier. This aeration basin, a secondary clarifier that's just off the photo to the left. They have a sludge storage vault, chlorine contact, and sulfur dioxide flow proportioning equipment. Also, in response to a cease and desist order issued by this board in 2004, the district has installed auxiliary power so that during power outages, the electrical equipment continues to function. More recently, the district has upgraded to variable frequency drives in their aeration basin. The facility has a wet weather design capacity of 143,000 gallons a day, and an average dry weather flow is about 50 to 60,000 gallons a day, with peak wet weather flows that approach 500 and 600,000 gallons in a day. So that's a pretty significant difference. The large difference is due to high rates of infiltration and inflow through the collection system, which we'll discuss later in the presentation. The headworks at this facility, which is very hard, you can't really see it from here, but it's this little tiny area just to the left of the aeration basin. And it basically consists of a small bar screen, which becomes readily clogged. So as soon as it becomes clogged, all of the solids will bypass and go into the aeration basin, grit and other large particles, which can compromise the capacity of the treatment. And at this point, I don't recall if they have removed solids from that aeration basin anytime recently. Notable changes in the proposed order include limitations, new effluent limitations based on reasonable potential analysis for five new constituents: copper, carbon tetrachloride, two disinfection byproducts, and nitrate. At this point, it's unlikely that the community will be able to come into compliance with these new limitations right away. As with all effluent limitations, these would be subject to mandatory penalties for effluent violation. The parameters for these new limits also require new routine monitoring. The increased monitoring is required to evaluate potential increases as well for ammonia concentrations that are likely to rise as the district attempts to address their nitrate concentrations. As well, we have increased monitoring requirements in the permit for biochemical oxygen demand and total suspended solids from monthly to weekly, which is consistent with the Clean Water Act requirements for weekly averages and also consistent with what we require at other wastewater plants. We have other notable changes in the proposed order. These three prohibitions, which are identified in the permit as prohibitions F, G, and H, are also consistent with requirements that we have for other communities in our region. These flow prohibitions are based on flow prohibitions are based upon the reported design capacity at the wastewater treatment facility, and the district has indicated to us that they do not anticipate any issues with complying with this new prohibition because it is based on a monthly average flow, not peak flows. The seasonal discharge prohibition and discharge rate limitation implement the requirements of the basin plan, and violation of any prohibition, these three, as well as the others in the permit, would be subject to discretionary enforcement, not mandatory penalties. So I want to talk a little bit about the discharge rate prohibition. We're going to see this photo a couple times because it really helps orient us. So the community, as I mentioned, receives all their waste by gravity and shares the conveyance with a stormwater pipe that discharges to this red zone here. And then in the wintertime, it overflows along this blue path and discharges into the Eel River, where the arrow is on the right-hand side. So data gathered during the last permit cycle essentially indicates that we don't have flow coming into this red area from the east. And so it's almost impossible to meet 100-to-1 rate of discharge that way. But we do have flow that's not associated with the wastewater treatment plant coming into the discharge point through the stormwater conveyance. So we are, in this permit, moving the flow rate monitoring point to upstream in that stormwater conveyance. In previous permits, we were measuring the rate compliance point, I believe at the Scotia gauging station. And just from looking at this picture, you can tell that that is not representative of the discharge location. So we're trying to be creative in finding a way to measure some flow at the wastewater plant. And it's not clear at this point that the treatment plant will be in compliance with that prohibition once we do start the monitoring. So this is what we refer to as the unnamed wetland. It's a close-up photo of that little red area that we were showing on the aerial, and you'll see it again on the next slide. But I just wanted to give you an idea of what it looks like up close. So, all right, so as mentioned previously, we have the underground pipe coming to this unnamed wetland. The National Wetlands Inventory from the Department of Fish and Wildlife identifies this feature as a freshwater pond. And whether we call it an old oxbow of the Eel River, a freshwater pond, an unnamed wetland, this is a water of the United States. And therefore, under the current configuration, discharges from the Lolita Wastewater Treatment Facility violate the seasonal surface water discharge prohibition, because this is the only place that they discharge year-round. So staff and the district have been discussing this issue since before probably the adoption of their last permit in 2008. And currently, we haven't had any proposals for an alternative summertime discharge location. Violations of the seasonal discharge prohibition, again, are subject to discretionary enforcement. So we're talking about infiltration and inflow. I just wanted to give you hopefully a worst case scenario shot of the aged collection system. Excessive infiltration and inflow have been a problem since the early 1990s at this facility. The permittee has conducted smoke testing and video surveys and have identified potential sources of infiltration and inflow, including this one, I'm sure, into the collection system. With this level of disrepair, the collection system is also likely to be exfiltrating to and potentially impacting groundwater. Some repairs have been made, but peak wintertime flows still exceed more than 9 times the average dry weather flow into the treatment plant. And Lolita has made some progress towards addressing these issues, and most recently have entered into an agreement with our enforcement staff to use some of their financial penalties to address, I believe, over $300,000 worth of infiltration and inflow issues. So I just sort of want to summarize for you the operational challenges and compliance concerns that are associated with the implementation of the proposed permit. So we still have the excessive infiltration and inflow, the lack of flow equalization, potential for diminished treatment because we have so much water coming through such a small treatment area very quickly, and potential groundwater impacts. We have an ineffective headworks, which, you know, doesn't remove certain things, but then also has a potential to impact the treatment capacity. We have a problematic discharge location, which despite our new effort to find a flow going into that discharge location that we can measure is likely to be exceeding the basin plan 100-to-1 requirement. And it's definitely in contrast to our summertime discharge prohibition for surface waters. We have new effluent limitations that are not likely to be easily complied with, and the remedies to compliance with those new limitations may not be easily remedied. The new effluent limitations could be subject to mandatory penalties, so that's a concern for us as imposing this on a small district. And of course, then they still have the ongoing liability that they're addressing through their infiltration and inflow repair program, but it's still money that has to come out of the district. So that's a challenge. One of the things I think that, you can just back up real quick, that staff would really like to see is, where am I? I think I went too fast for myself. So one thing I want to point out is that the decision before the board today is whether or not to adopt the proposed order, which renews the MPDS permit and contains some of these items. But I don't want to bring all of these concerns to you without giving you a proposed solution. And so the thing that staff is considering right now and continuing to work with the district is bringing a cease and desist order before this board for consideration and adoption that could give the district time to come into compliance with those new effluent limitations without being subject to mandatory penalties, and also addressing some of these discharge point concerns in a manner that gives time to evaluate the options and slowly, you know, do what needs to be done to bring this facility into compliance. So we would hope that we would be able to bring that before the board maybe in October, before the wintertime discharge season is initiated, and before this district would actually start racking up those mandatory penalties. We'd also really like to see the district aggressively pursuing the grant and loan opportunities through the State Board, State Revolving Fund. They would be fairly high on the priority list given their size and the potential enforcement order for receiving funding, as well as hopefully some principal forgiveness, you know, also known as grants. So we will continue, regardless of working with the district to try and resolve these problems, which probably seem a little overwhelming for a community of 750 people. And then with that, I would recommend that the board consider adopting order number R1-2014-0013 as proposed. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Board member questions?
Mr. Chair. couple of questions. Number one, what are the current rates that the district is paying?
I would leave that question to the district manager, but okay. I think it's around $60-ish.
It's for a single-family residence, $569 a year.
Can you do the 12-month math for me on that?
Sure, 50 minus 31 divided by 12. So 47, I would say, is that right?
Well, I guess.
How much?
Less than 50 bucks.
Less than $50 a month. Under 50, just under.
In terms of money, because I, from experience, all of these things are going to take money, and I'm wondering how much grant funding, because we certainly, if you have a CDO in place, you will be eligible for grant funding to do some of this. Otherwise, we're looking at a whole lot of mandatory minimum fines that rack up. And I'm wondering how much grant funding has been applied for, and are there any plans? If not, are there any plans to apply for that? And I may probably asking the wrong person, huh, Lisa?
Probably. How about if we let Marcus talk to you?
I'll hold on to it, including rates, but I think
okay.
That's where I want to go.
Are there any other questions for me? I can always come back, too.
Well, you laid out one procedure to avoid racking up mandatory minimum penalties. Do you see any others on the horizon or any other options?
I don't know of any direct way that the city or the district is going to be able to. They have a chlorination system for disinfection. So I don't really see how they're going to avoid disinfection byproducts given their current situation, not to mention that they have now this increased monitoring. So I guess the short answer to your question is no. I'm not aware of any other easily remedied opportunity to avoid the mandatory penalties.
Thank you.
Just a question. You mentioned that the plant was built in 1978.
In its current configuration. I think there was something there earlier than that.
Can this facility, regardless of how much money it takes, be brought up to today's standard?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It can. Okay. So it is a viable option to pour
with
money into
even,
this.
Other small communities have put shared wall construction, which this already is, but, with updated equipment to do nutrient removal and primary and secondary clarification, within a very small footprint. So even maybe not the flow equalization, but hopefully we could get at some of that with the infiltration and inflow corrections that are being implemented by the district at this point. So they don't own a lot of property, but I think that the existing footprint of the facility is large enough to do very high quality treatment.
And is the number of residents in the district fairly static, and is there opportunity for it to grow exponentially in the next decade?
I don't think we've seen exponential growth in Humboldt County for a really long time. So it's fairly static. It's possible that they might have some growth, but
Well, exponentially could be 20 units in 5 years. I mean, are we talking about building in that kind of capacity as well for some growth, or we're just trying to maintain status quo?
I think there was a development that was planning to go in, and maybe Marcus would be better to answer that question as well.
Hi, this is Mona Doherty with the wastewater program. I just wanted to comment a little bit on that, Board Member Giusti. There are other options that could happen at this facility too, so we'd hope that the district consider alternatives, which might be connecting to another nearby wastewater treatment plant, so looking at a regional solution, or they could look at some upgrades to the facility, and then also maybe moving to a land discharge versus a surface water discharge. That would help some of their compliance issues, the requirements that they would have to meet and the monitoring requirements would be lesser, and they wouldn't be subject to mandatory minimum penalties. So there are other options that we're hoping the district is considering besides just rebuilding the plant. So there can be a combination of things here that could bring them into compliance.
And one last question. Doesn't the city of Arcata use a constructed wetland as part of their effluent management?
Keyword constructed.
Right. So the current wetland could not be manipulated into a constructed wetland. That option doesn't provide itself for this particular example?
There could be a possibility to do that. However, it would be basically taking waters in the United States and turning it into a treatment system. So there would be permitting requirements and mitigation would be needed. They would need to mitigate for that loss of waters in the United States. So that that could be part of a solution, but there are some permitting hurdles there.
Thank you.
And that doesn't actually overall address the ultimate discharge point either, unless that wetland was to contain the effluent at all times.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right.
Mr. Chair, I think it is a question for you guys. We have limits for carbon tetrachloride diet. That's an unusual constituent in effluents. Do we know the source of it?
Not at this time. I'm not aware that there's an old dry cleaner. You know, there was a laundry facility, but it wasn't a dry cleaning facility. I really don't know what the source of solvents might be. We have a very limited data set, trying to keep our costs down for low-income, small communities when we do monitoring. So we have a very limited data set. It's possible that it showed up one time and maybe it won't come again. It's really not clear to us at this point.
If it proves to be persistent in their effluent, though, one task in their cease and desist order may be to do some source analysis.
Thank you.
Just a comment that...
Board Member Hale?
Is it possible, Mona, could you comment whether carbon tetrachloride could be a disinfection byproduct?
I'll let Lisa take that.
I think the district believes that it could possibly be a disinfection byproduct, but I haven't seen that at other facilities.
Yeah, I guess I comment too. We haven't seen that at other facilities, but I guess I would be hesitant with my lack of chemistry expertise to say that it's not possible. So we would need to look into that further, but that hasn't been our experience.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, question in your... Just to kind of address the urgency and the significance with the wetland right now, you had concluded in the end of your presentation that you wanted to bring it back to us by October before the winter flows come. And it seems like it'd be more significant for a low flow time where concentrations are higher and if you have exfiltration potential. So it seems like, I wouldn't suggest that October is waiting by any means. That's actually pretty accelerated by our standards to have something turned around and back to us in October. So I just wanted to make sure that I'm understanding it correctly, that we have a real problem right now, regardless of low or high flow.
That is correct.
Okay. Thanks.
Right.
Okay, any other board member comments or questions? Okay, we will call on the discharger. Please state your name and address for the record and whether you were sworn.
Sorry, name and what?
Please state your name and address for the record and
sure.
Whether you were sworn.
I'm Marcus Strum. I'm general manager of the Lolita Community Services District. The address of the district is Post Office Box 236, Lolita, 95551.
Thank you.
I primarily came here to answer your questions. I've heard some of them already, but give you at least our view and the efforts that we're making. Thank you. A couple of comments of things that have already come up. The original plant was built in 1956. The clarifier was added in the 70s when the original clarifier was converted to chlorine contact. Before that, there was no disinfection. We are probably not just a disadvantaged community, but severely disadvantaged. The last census that was done, we came out at 61.5% of California median household income, but that's actually a larger, that area includes some of the farms just outside of town, and I think you're going to find that those ranches are going to have higher income average than included. So if we were to do a survey in town, my guess is we'd come in below 60%. Okay, so first, what I did last time we had a permit come up, I did want to share with you. I have usually said that our testing costs are run between 5 and 10% of our operating budget. That's not true this year. With the new permit and including the California Toxic Rule test, which is not going to necessarily be repeated, it's going to be 11%. I haven't done the budget, which will be approved next month, but it looks right now like our testing will be at 11. That doesn't include retesting that will happen as a result of chronic and acute toxicity. And it looks like even without the recurring California toxic rule with these new constituents, we're looking at about 17,000 a year. Our budget's right around 200. It's been very consistent. At least over the last 5 years. Part of that was the variable frequency drive. Part of that was we put a pre-treatment system in, or insisted on pre-treatment at the cheese factory in town, which lowered our BOD, and therefore lowered our sludge hauling, which is a major cost for us, and our PG&E, obviously. So to go over the last 5 years, we probably have done over $100,000 in repairs. We have over $350,000 planned for this year under the compliance plan. We probably would have done more, but we had enough mandatory penalties outstanding that it would have been unwise for us to spend the money on repairs and then not have any money to get credit when we came up with the compliance plan. So we're planning 350,000 repairs this year. We're also in the process, or we have a contract out for preparation of a planning grant that has three parts, and I'll take them in reverse order. The last part would be a sanitary system evaluation survey that would be after our current repairs to highlight the next repairs that we would need to do on our system. Again, I&I being the major problem, but what that flow also feeds into is the capacity of the plant or the capacity of any future plant upgrades. Then the second part, of course, is what we have as a plant, what it can do, what upgrades are required. But all of that is fed by this discharge point. How do we get rid of whatever quality of water we have? Right now we're a Title 23 plant. That could change, as you said on this foot, or as was said on this footprint. I've seen membrane plants we have 1 acre, so I've seen membrane plants on that square footage, which would certainly accomplish it. That would require equalization, that would require headworks, and that would require great reductions in I&I as a capacity issue. So all those things could be done. Most of our challenges, other than the obvious, which is the discharge point, and again, I will tell you that before the plant was built in 56, the stormwater conveyance pipe into which it discharges was the discharge plant for the dry milk plant in town. There was no treatment. They just discharged all the way to the Eel River. The red mark there used to be the Eel River. In 1965, it moved. So what you can also see is all of the green below the red mark, that's all riparian forest. As you can see at the top, based on the contours of the lands, any curve you see is a slough. So if you look at streams, that whole area is riddled with them. If you look at stream management areas, you can expand all those 200 feet in every direction. If you add wetland, you can basically draw a line halfway between the sewer plant and the Eel River. And if you add the FEMA floodplain, everything outside of the road is in the floodplain. The floodplain actually comes onto the wastewater plant grounds. The bottom edge of the wastewater plant grounds is at 7 feet elevation. So obviously discharge is an issue. I've heard a lot about drought today. That's not a problem here. We are lucky. We had a new well drilled probably 4 years ago. That well level has dropped from 8 feet below ground to 9 feet below ground. It's a 170-foot well. So the problem with us finding places to irrigate is most people that irrigate in the pasture lands below one are in the floodplain, and two, mostly they spread manure. What they're doing is spreading manure. They may not even need to get rid of water, but they have to spread manure. There is some irrigation. Again, water table there is 8 feet below ground tops, so we would be in paying them to take our water, and it still has the nitrate issues and other issues that we've talked about. Let's see, other things facing us. The other one facing us is just basically the push down in regulations from larger plants to smaller plants. Some of that has appeared in the constituencies that have been added. The sewer system management plan. We were reclassified in the last year from a grade 2 plant to a grade 3 plant. We've spent probably $4,000 this year training one of our operators up. He just took the test. We'll get that result July 1st, but in case he didn't, we already have to plan for the October test. So getting maintaining, like any small district, maintaining operators, especially at a grade 3 level, is a difficulty facing us. I think that's most of, what I wanted to say. But I wanted to be to answer any questions you have.
Board members have any questions or comments?
Mr. Chair? I do have sympathy for the small system. Unfortunately, though, this permit doesn't make it easier on you. And in reality, we spent some time yesterday talking to Office of Enforcement. And, I have a very hard time to take money out of small communities under fines. And it sounds like you're moving towards a grant to do some planning and infrastructure improvement. I would certainly encourage you to do that post-haste. The accruing of mandatory minimum penalties, a cease and desist order would be very preferable here to shield you from some of that, but with that comes the obligation for you to move forward and find solutions. And I realize that that's a very big challenge. I would absolutely recommend that you engage our staff at every turn. I have found them to be high caliber for professionals to help in this type of endeavor. The problem is, too, is at this point, as it sits today, is becoming quickly inconsistent with regulatory requirements in our basin plan, and it's not going to get easier on you to try and be static. And I'm not saying that you're that way. You're certainly, I think, trying to face challenges all from collection system on out to the point of discharge. I think this board would love to see this plant as much as you probably to be compliant.
So actually you did bring up, there is the same pressure of pushing things down, from larger plants to smaller plants is the push to consolidation. Getting certified operators is a real problem just because the hour requirements they have don't match the operations of small communities, which I guess are the majority of plants, as far as total number. My guess is that everyone on the Eel River has a dual permit, NPD, ES, and WDR. I'm guessing most of them have irrigation issues. So I'm not sure that shipping our waste elsewhere, it takes the problem from us and puts it on someone else. But again, a lot of our compliance, at least as I'm trying to focus the effort, is on identifying a way to get rid of it. It's not just this discharge point. It's the entire area. I would love a silver bullet if it was year-round, but even dually, it doesn't matter how little our flow is if it regulatorily cannot be gotten rid of. And if it can, then the question is how much, and that addresses our INI issue. My focus has always been at this point, and 8 years, is reducing INI, because no matter what we do, we have to reduce our flows so that we have a way to get rid of it. But the wetland issue is real. I know you're going to be talking a little about that later. I do find blanket prohibitions. I understand the principle, but blanket prohibitions on discharge unrealistic. I joke that the basin plan doesn't allow it to rain between May and October, and certainly doesn't allow it to rain with a pH of less than 6.5. There must be some quality of water that could be discharged. Wetlands should be protected, but you're not going to protect the wetlands by not letting any water into it. You're not going to protect a river by not letting any water into it. So I know you're going to, at least I understand you're going to talk somewhat about discharges of the river during the prohibited period and basin plan amendments. But those are certainly things that would change the landscape for us.
Agreed. I think at the same time, though, just changing the discharge prohibition on the seasonal discharge is not going to, that's a piece of the puzzle here. And I'm certainly not advocating to force you to try and come to consolidation. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that as a board member, I see an increasing difficulty for you to comply with some of the basic regs here. You've got nitrate as a constituent of concern, which is a basic for a wastewater treatment plan for effluent discharge. Carbon tetrachloride's an oddball.
That's an oddball, and it's an oddball to me. Everything else, there are ways to handle it. I did over the last couple months, because we had quarterly testing of nitrates. I can reduce nitrates to less than 10. Unfortunately, my ammonia goes from one part to seven parts.
Right.
Well, I've passed my nitrate limit, so regulatorily, I must be good. I would like to take a holistic approach, but a lot of that really requires me to look what's happening to big plants and assume that we're going to have to meet those standards. Obviously, Newport Beach is producing drinking water from there, and if that's the technology we have to adopt, we can look at that price. But, the blanket prohibition in wetlands and river, if you're on in a wetland and a river, I know Ferndale got their 1-to-1 dilution, but there's no way around that one. I guess there is ocean discharge, but that's a whole different ballgame.
Board Member Massey.
Thank you. I certainly share your frustration. I have been part of a small system for a long, long time. And I'm also part of a state water board, and I'm also a citizen of the U.S., and I think the thing that we need to understand is that we find a way to get things solved, and we get a solution for you as much as any other small district, or there are, as they say, forces out there that will do it. Several years ago, a member of the California State Senate put through mandatory minimums, and it simply locked the hands of this board. We couldn't do anything.
I understand.
And so I understand the reasons you're saying we can't do this and we can't do that, but at some point, somebody is going to say, we don't care whether you can do it or not, you will or else. We don't want to get there. I don't want to get there. I think we need to look at alternatives that are available to the extent that it is possible. For instance, I understand Doug is back there, and he is actually from the city of Fortuna now, much closer than he was when he was over in Ferndale. He has been up some of this road. There are simply things that need to be done, and these folks, Lisa and the rest of the staff, are interested in helping you. We've got to, but we have to do it. Frankly, your rates at less than $50, even in a low-income community, they're low.
Mm-hmm.
That you're not going to get a lot of acceptance out of both your board and out of the general public. But if it takes money, it's going to take money. The discharge prohibition to summer stuff, is, that's a killer. Okay. Yeah, I mean, that will be a fine system if it doesn't, and there's just no other way. It's part of the basin plan. You got to do it. How it gets done, I don't know, but I'm pleased. Work with the staff.
And I've been pleased working with the staff. It's again, that discharge point's been there since 1956, and they've been talking about irrigation since probably 2 years after that. I would rather have the elephant on the table. I mean, because we can, again, we upgraded the plant. We've changed the speed of the sludge return so that we can tweak it and get less solids going out when we have a blowout. But I can tweak the plant forever as long as I still have INI and no place to put effluent. We need to address the discharge point or the discharge method. Again, that's why it's in here. I complete agreement with Lisa to put it in here. Because it was the elephant, it has been the elephant in the room for 50 years, and all the other, you know, things we can put money into, don't change that elephant.
Mm-hmm.
The rates were done based on a rate study based on BOD TSS, and flow. Again, if I need to do a rate study based on other constituents that again, are going to affect our rate and affect penalties, I can do that. But again, till they show up in our permit, for me to throw them into a rate study, it's tougher. But I mean, we already have, I mean, we're one of the smallest communities that has a BOD related rate. So it's, I mean, and plus we have a 20% surplus every year that goes into the account. But until we have a direction to go, I mean, one of the things that I at one point was pushing was switching to hypochlorite, not necessarily because of chlorine, but because of safety. That would have been a really bad investment if I can't use chlorine as disinfection. So if I know we're going to UV, or I love ozone myself, but, you know, I don't want to be pushing a bunch of interim solutions that aren't going to get the direction that we're eventually need to be. And so, again, the discharge point, I'm aware of it. The regional board has been aware of it. The board is aware of it. But until we see a path, you know, even throwing money at a planning study makes me cringe, but that's the game right now. So that's where we are. And that's what we're applying for.
Okay. Any other board comment or question? I think that's it. Thank you for your time. I'll open it up. Is anyone from the public? I don't have any speaker cards. Okay, I'm going to bring it back to the board for a motion.
Mr. Chair, I would give you a motion to adopt order number R12014-0013.
Is there a second? And I just want to reaffirm you have the challenge of the treatment. You also have to find a strategy to get out of the mandatory minimum penalties, because otherwise it just goes out the district and you don't have the money to make the repairs that you need to do or upgrades. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say nay. The motion carries unanimously. I'm going to, it's past 12, I'm going to take an hour break for lunch. And so we'll be meeting back here at 1:40.